Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So,
Start again.
Here we are. Welcome to the Self-Isolate In with Juvenile Alan. It's me, DJ Owen, and Alan McGuire of the Juvenile podcast. Alan, welcome back for the second time to the Self-Isolate In.
Thank you so much. I'm going to do much better. Thank you. And first impression this time. Delighted to be back. This is my third time here now. Third time on the podcast. Yeah. I've not been to your houses before. This is not me saying I've been to your houses. I have got Downs's here, my spiritual home. It's nice to pretend to be here very briefly. It's nice to drink early, as we were saying. I'm excited. Excited to do some talking. Yeah.
Brilliant. And I suppose we'll kick straight into it. What are you drinking tonight?
So, I did a whole thing last time, but it's Sol. It's a very obscure beer called Sol. It's Spanish for sun. It tastes like the summer. I got it in a quality food store. So it is technically still fancy, but it is just Sol. Basically, I'm leaving the house once a week to go shopping. So I bought this last Saturday and forgot I was doing this on Friday. I would have bought something nicer and I'm very sorry.
No, I was just having a bottle of Heineken there before we started. So needs must.
Absolutely. Absolutely needs must. And what are you drinking tonight?
So I have switched off the Heineken and I'm now on this Lockdown IPA by Kildare Brewing Company. It's nice. It's 6.3%, and it is really fruity and stuff. I quite like it. It doesn't taste like 6.3%. It's quite light to drink. I've been flaking it into me. I'd say I could be absolutely leery by the end of this.
I hope so.
Yeah, but actually, last time I saw you in person, DJ, was dropping 12 cans of that stuff at your house. Don't tell the guards. It's not a necessary journey, I suppose it is. Is it?
That was an essential journey because I was all out of beer. And like you said, I'm also on the Lockdown IPA from the Kildare Brewing Company. Fantastic, really juicy, really easy to drink, and just delicious can. Again, shout out to them lads. Like, they just brewed it basically because of lockdown, and they had the ingredients in the brewery, and they were like, right, we must throw something together now, and they threw together a great can, a delicious drink, and one that I'm thoroughly enjoying. I suppose, Alan, we loved having you on the show the last couple of times, so we said, fuck it, we'll try and get you on again and have a chat about, I suppose, the last self-isolated in, we talked about the Irish language a bit, but it wasn't as much about COVID-19 and being in lockdown, etc. Whereas the two previous, we talked to Finn Dwyer about, I suppose, the history of pandemics, and then we talked with Finn and Tony Groves about how the media were handling it. Whereas, like, I suppose what the one thing that we're doing on lockdown is everyone is kind of just streaming, watching a bit more on demand, consuming a bit more of on demand media. So I suppose, first of all, for people who aren't familiar with Juvenilia, do you want to just explain what your podcast, along with your two friends, Sarah and, what's the other girl's name? Ellen. Just what Juvenilia of Sarah and Ellen, what the premise of it is, and then it might give people a bit more of an insight as to why we deem you the expert on on-demand media.
Sure. So Juvenilia is a podcast that is coming up on its 100th episode actually next month, where we talk to a guest about a bit of pop culture that was important to them when they were young. So the guest always picks a topic, and it's always something that was unique to them, so that we get like their story on why it's important. So we get weird things then that aren't necessarily the standard, like weird old horror movies or specific ads or stuff like that. So yeah, it's me, Sarah Maria Griffin, and Ellen Tanham. Ellen is in Vancouver at the moment, so she's taking a little break from it. But so it's mostly me and Sarah now on the Tall Tales Network, which is where the Creep Dive is also. So we were Cassie a lot, which is very good. And yeah, it's just all about how pop culture is comforting, essentially, is what the show is about. How you can really associate it with where you were at a time. So I think a lot of people are going to have very strong associations with certain like Netflix series or albums with right now. Like I think it'll be very hard to separate Tiger King from what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
So that's Juvenilia.
And I remember the last time, or the first thing we had you on, we talked about like, Jesus, will like Beyonce or whatever be Juvenilia for the teenagers of today when they're like in their 30s, Tiger King is going to be a massive one in 20 years time. Like people will have this affection for the series Tiger King that like we would have for, you know, TV shows of our generation when we were in that like really impressionable age bracket of 10 to 14.
I'm not sure I want to meet the person who is like, who has Tiger King as central to their personality though. The person who internalized all of that and has decided to live their life based on Tiger King. I think that would be a worrisome person.
But I think there'd definitely be people with like tiger prints and stuff, like, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Pennies will definitely do a line like.
Mm. Oh yeah, if Halloween happens this year, there will be a lot of Tiger Kings, Joe Exotics around, I would say.
You're growing a mullet already, are you?
I am scared to cut my own hair. Because I'm at an age where if it goes wrong, it won't come back. So I have to be very careful.
You did a hack job in your one there, did you? Give the viewers a look there. See if you.
Oh, I can't turn around. I actually cut my own hair with a dodgy kitchen scissors that it was half broken the other day. It took chunks out of my scalp. But like, I'm kind of gone further than you are, Alan, and that kind of like, you know, it's kind of gone now anyway. So I might as
well. Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of like, I'm kind of owning it now. I think I'm absolutely owning by cutting it with a blunt, shite scissors. I think it's quite interesting. I wonder will like in 6 or 7 years time will we be going to like the communions of school children and like when they're calling out the role, will there be like you know, Joe Exotic O'Doherty and making their holy communions in 6 or 7 years time.
I reckon there will definitely be someone who will try make Exotic their confirmation name.
Oh,
in a couple of years.
That'd be so good. What means Exotic actually?
Was it?
No.
We need to make it so it was a Saint Exotic. We need to find someone whose name was Exotic who created the three miracles.
yeah.
Not Joe. He would love that, I would say.
Only Exotic or something, yeah.
Mm.
From Boundless Law.
Vanilla's Exotic from Venice. Yeah.
Exotic Medici.
Yeah.
So I think we're in, you know, we're in that kind of mode now where like Alan, you were saying before we came on that you're 5 weeks now working from home and that your wife is working from home also. So I suppose for many people who are working from home or maybe who are out of work and are at home now, you're passing the day, and then the evening time is very much consumed by on-demand media. I'd say a lot of people's is. I know certainly a lot of ours was before we had to isolate from each other in our house. We were kind of going to go into a bit more detail on one program each in the podcast, but I just want to ask, Tiger King aside, because obviously that's been a highlight, what has been your gem that you've picked up on so far in lockdown?
We got really into Next in Fashion last weekend, which is, it's basically Netflix's version of Project Runway. It has Tan France and Alexa Chung as judges, and it's the people in it are at a higher level in their career than the Project Runway people. But it is essentially Project Runway, but just Tan France is like, do you watch Queer Eye? Or have you watched Queer Eye?
No, I haven't, no.
So Tan is the English one on Queer Eye, and he is...
Is he kind of grey-haired, is he?
Yes. Okay. So he's the fashion guy on that, and he is definitely less American therapy speak than they are, than the other four guys. And on this, he is a bit more let loose because he's around a lot of other English people. He's a very funny guy, and he dresses a lot more flamboyantly, more high fashion on this than he does in Queer Eye. I think he tones himself down on Queer Eye a lot, so it's cool to see him do that. He has a really good YouTube series called Dressing Funny, where he gives comedians makeovers. Basically says, what do you actually want to look like? Because comedians can't dress themselves, and basically brings him shopping. So the first one he did was with Hasan Minhaj from Patriot Act. And it kind of launched Patriot Act because it has like 12 million views or something like that. It's just a really, really, really interesting, like 15-minute video of two guys of, I think, one Indian descent, one Pakistani descent, talking about being of that origin and trying to make a career in Hollywood and what you have to do and how you have to tone yourself down or not and whether you should or not. And it's supposed to be just about him dressing him for his new show, but it turns into this whole discussion about race and TV and stuff, and it's a really, really cool thing. That's on YouTube, and Next in Fashion's on Netflix. And if you've seen... There's a clip going around of how Victoria Beckham can't speak to normal people right now for her Vogue 73 questions thing. So this guy comes up to her and she goes, "Hey, Daniel." And he goes, "Hey." And then she just ignores him and starts talking to the camera again. And he's like, "Okay." But he's one of the designers on it anyway. He is super talented as well. So it's really a shame we didn't get more of a minute in the spotlight with Victoria Beckham.
That's classic Beckham, I'd say.
Yeah.
That's interesting, Dr. Richard, what you're saying there about that, you say the Indian and Pakistani people and how their experiences of Hollywood. Have you seen the comedy by Aziz Ansari, Master of None?
Oh, yeah, I love it, yeah.
And, there's kind of, like, tidbits of that, like, just kind of mentioned in that, like, in the first series anyway, like, but, yeah, it's very funny, and I suppose that kind of, like, reared up its head then with, like, Apu and The Simpsons and, like, you know... Like, you know, it was portrayed as, you know, racist, especially because who's the guy who does his voice again?
Hank Azaria,
yeah. Obviously not of Indian descent. But yeah, no, I think it's just a take on Hollywood that, like, I would never have seen before, I've never heard about before, and that series. But yeah, I actually love Master None. Like, it's just great. So funny, but like, then just like pulls the heartstrings as well, like, just those. I don't know. It's such a modern comedy, observational comedy. It's brilliant, like,
and it's beautifully shot. It does.
Oh, it's brilliant!
The whole thing is the second series, especially, is in Italy, and it's shot like an amazing film. I'm not a critic, so I'm going to use very simple words. It's shot like a really, really good film. The cinematography.
It's
very
good.
It's good. I think I like it. Yeah.
Irish Times, sign him up there.
Yeah.
New film critic.
Editor away, Donald Clark. I think things are good or bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really come across any gems because I find, like, you know the way when you were, I don't know if any of you guys, like, when you were, say, first, second year of secondary school, when you were, like, too young to work, but you're on your summer holidays from school.
Oh, yeah.
You're given jobs, like, and you might go off with, like, you know, your uncle for a day doing something, or your mother might have a few jobs to do, but the vast majority of your time is just sitting around doing nothing. Like, I mean, like 80% of your day, you're literally like finding things to occupy yourself with.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually gone down that kind of route with this, where I found myself embracing that period of my life where I've gone back to watch things that I watched back then. And I suppose that's probably a way to segue on to like, you know, we're going to try and recommend to people stuff to stream or something that has really kind of, you know, we've really enjoyed in the last couple of weeks. And you know, that 70s show ran from 1998 to 2005, I think, right? So it basically ran from when I was 8 until I was 15. And it's just a timeless classic, I believe. Like, I really, really enjoy it. And I think, like, I really resonate with some of the characters. But as well, with the way the lockdown was going, and it's that kind of, like, I'm around the house all day with kind of pretty much fuck all to do. And I'm doing a bit of work from home and all that. But you know the way, like, your day is just long. So I've been watching that 70 show back. I've plowed through 7 of the 8 series so far. And I just think the great thing, and it ties in with Juvenalia nicely, Alan, is that 70 show has given me that nice nostalgia, that nice bit of pop culture from when I was the age that I would have been around the house all day without it, not going out to go to work or not doing anything. It just, it's a very similar parallel in terms of like social situation in a sense. And it just brings me right back to that time, which I don't know how it is for you guys, but I found watching that 70 show, I'm almost nearly, when I'm watching it, reverting back to like 13, 14 year old myself watching it, and really, really enjoying it. And it's evoking like some really, really good memories of being a 13 year old idiot. Like,
yeah, no, I remember really clearly the first time that it aired on, it was on Network 2. And it used to be like on their Monday night block. Monday night Network 2 used to be like the best thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I was in transition year when it started. And I remember we all came into school the next day and nobody had heard about it. And it just came on. And everybody was like, did you see that 70s show last night? And everybody was like, yeah. It was like, it was really good, wasn't it? And everybody was like, yeah, it's really good. And like it became instantly bigger than friends in our friend group. It was like, we would come into school every Tuesday and talk about the 70s show. There was somebody who was like, we could not wait to talk to each other about some of those episodes. Like, I can't not remember a single bit of that 70s show now, but I remember loving it and I will watch all of it again. But yeah, it was a huge deal. I'm excited that you mentioned it now. It's kind of put it back on my radar.
Yeah. But it's also one of those brilliant titles for a TV show. I mean, they had, I'm trying to remember what the initial title was supposed to be. And actually they went through 2 or 3 titles before the writers and creators, the Turner brothers, I think, and the Mark Bonney, they like basically decided, fuck it, everyone's just going to refer to it as That 70 Show. So that's how they came around to calling it That 70 Show. They actually had 3 or 4 other names. I think the network were pushing a certain name that was kind of really out left field, and they were like, no, That 70 Show, everyone's going to just call it that anyway, so we should just call it that.
Do you remember the British remake of it?
Oh yeah,
it was called Days Like These.
Days Like These.
Oh yeah.
It lasted about 6 episodes because it was like the first episodes were exactly the same like they did for like The Office and stuff, but because like Britain in the '70s was nothing like that, nobody had a basement with weed in it, so or like that big, that kind of lino breakfast or like breakfast bar kitchen.
Oh yeah,
like, none of this works. Nobody had a bar in their sitting room. Well, maybe they did. I don't know. I wasn't alive, but it just didn't work at all. It's a very, very suburban, like American show, like Freaks and Geeks is, I guess.
It is, but
I think suburban America back then was probably like wealthier than like suburban UK in the '70s.
Yeah.
Like, so like people were just like, sure, like, oh, okay. Like, even if you kind of think it's your own house during the like the '90s or whatever, like it was just like that style of house where you wouldn't have a bar in it, like, you know, like you just kind of just has a fucking few old drapes in the corner and old mahogany fucking chest of drawers or something, like just like no, there's no style at all in Ireland or the UK, I'd say, in that period of time, like, you know.
Yeah. where you'd buy like the floor that was in style in 1991 and then like the like covers that were in style in 1993 and not pay any attention to what the floor was in relation to those. Now we're doing this.
It's very modular, like just building on and on.
But they also as well brought out that 80s show that didn't last the full series. And actually, the guy that plays Dennis and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia was the protagonist to that. And it did, again, it only lasted a couple of episodes because I think the 80s is kind of funny, whereas like the 70s, they were able to get away with it. Especially with, I think they were very smart in that they set it in like Wisconsin, a small town in Wisconsin, kind of suburban town in Wisconsin. And as well, I think like the characters and the actors just lined up really well. It's like any show that stands the test of time and goes on for more than like one or two series. You're talking about a brilliant cast that match up really, really well.
Mm.
And I just want to ask you, like, who's your favourite character from that Sunday show? Owen.
Oh, Red. 100%. Yeah. Red Foreman is just the fucking biggest hero of all time. Like, he's just the most grumpiest bastard ever. Like, I absolutely love him. Like, him and like, actually, I love Kitty as well. Like, just the two parents are just quality. Like, you know, because like the obviously the kind of teenage cast or whatever, they all have their little quirks themselves, but they always kind of like blend in as a unit. But it's great just to have like that parental role model just coming in, just being like, what the fuck are you at? Like, just will you ever settle down? Like, you're just a pack of idiots, like all of you. Like, I love Red. He's so good.
What I love about Red as well is, I mean, like, my dad, right, was Red. He's not Red now. He's not Red now. It's funny, like, because I'm the eldest of five, and like, I remember at the time, there's so many parallels in terms of the fact that, like, my dad was trying to raise five kids who were all like under, like I was 14 and there was five of us and trying to work and all that. You're all stressed, like, so my dad was that grumpy man for the period of time that I was watching that Sydney show. And like now he's just the nicest guy ever, we're like best mates. But I just think back to that time, like my dad was just like this, like, you know, you'd look at him the wrong way and he wouldn't call you a dumbass like Red Bull, but he'd have some other word for you, you know, and he's just like, I look back in it really fondly now because I can just imagine the fucking pressures of trying to bring up a family like Red when he lost his job, whatever. It was my dad trying to rear like five kids at one time. He's just a brilliant character. And I think no matter what your dad was like, there would be a touch of Red in everyone's dad, if you know what I mean. I think even like some of the softer episodes where, like, you know, the one in Series 7 where they go to the American football game and Eric buys the other team's jersey, like, and it's like, but he still sticks up for him, though. I think there's just that Red is the quintessential grumpy owl lad, isn't he? Like, he's just a brilliant character. I don't want to make him for Red.
I think, you know, I really like Eric. I think he's a really good main character centered all around.
Yeah.
Because he is smart and funny, but he's not like smarter than everybody else. He can be very easily outwitted, which is very important for a main character, because otherwise, like, he'll just get out of everything. So he does like mess up a lot and say the stupid thing when there is definitely a smarter thing you can say. I think this Topher Grace is a really good actor. I wish he was in more stuff now. There's a website,
like, the last season of the 70s show.
Well, yeah.
What happened there? He went to do Spider-Man 3, was it?
Yeah, well, he got that role, and I think he had fallen out with the producers about, he felt that, like, that Sydney show was holding back his career.
All right.
I read an interview with him from a couple of years ago where he actually said he didn't realize how good he had it, and that basically he went for that role in Spider-Man thinking that he was ready to make that step up, and he said it probably came a little bit too soon for him, and he wasn't able to fill the character as well, and it just happened to be that Spider-Man series wasn't as good as, you know.
Well, that film.
That film what wasn't, I suppose, what he thought it might lead on to be. And he played your man from the Ku Klux Klan in Black Klansman really, really well. Like,
he was great in that. Yeah.
Like, I think that the mark of a brilliant actor is when they can play someone who you're supposed to really, really hate. And if they can do that well, then they're a good actor. Like, it's kind of like your man that plays Bob Kelso in Scrubs. Like, he's just a brilliant actor. The evil hate figure really well. And I kind of watched Black Klansman from the new film Respect for Topher Grace as an actor. I thought it was really, really good. Brilliant. Mm.
Very interesting to see what he does with that, with his energy as he gets older.
Yeah.
I used to read this website called Video Gum. It doesn't exist anymore, but they used to do a weekly column called "Hey, what's up with Topher Grace?" where they would just collate all the news about Topher Grace that they could find online, and it was kind of just basically like satirizing like the fact that everything was being reported on about every celebrity all the time. That you could do a full column every week about Topher Grace in 2007, because even though, you know, there was no reason for it, but it would always end with "And that 70s show remains popular in syndication," and it still does even now, 13 years later.
Yeah,
it's true, and it will be true forever and ever, I think.
Yeah, I just think it's a brilliant show, and I think it does capture a lot of the 70s, but as well, like, it's mad the way you're watching a show about, you know, the late 1970s. I mean, the 8 seasons are condensed into 3 chronological years as well, but it's mad that you can watch a show about 1977, 78, 79, and a lot of like the subtext and the social themes running through the show are still relevant today. So I think it's really well written as well. And you know, there are not too many sitcoms where like people have gone on to have the careers that Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis have had as well beyond that. But it's a great show. So I've watched 7 series now, and I don't know, do I want to watch the last one? That's the thing.
It's weird when a core person leaves. We'll talk about that when we talk about Community as well. Or even when someone leaves a band as well, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen any of the Topher Graceless 70 show episodes, actually. I think I dropped out before then.
Yeah, I don't think it's great.
Do you remember liking him, or yeah?
Well, the guy that came in, I don't think his name was Eric, actually. They gave him a different name as well. I mean, I think it was okay.
Derek.
Yeah. But you're just there, and you're like, this isn't the show that I've fallen in love with the last 7 years. So Owen, we'll give Alan the honor of being the last show. What's your pick for the for people to stream in the next couple of weeks?
So I may have misread or misheard the brief for this podcast, and so I thought it was just kind of review. So I suppose, like yourself, DJ, we were talking on what day did I call it? Tuesday. And we were saying, oh, what are we kind of planning on doing in terms of just watching in general? And you said that you were going to go back because the latest episode of, or the latest chapter, I suppose, of The Mandalorian is coming out and streaming on Disney Plus. And I think the last series of Star Wars Clone Wars is being released this week as well. So I was like you, I was like, well, I'm doing the same. Like, I'm going back to the start and I'm watching from episode 1, because I'm going to do it in chronological order. So I'm going to watch episode 1 first. So last weekend, I think I watched Star Wars episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Man, that is one piece of shit movie. Oh my god, it's just so bad. Like, it's like when you watch like the original trilogy and you just compare that, like it starts off, like even the initial bit with the text that rolls up the screen, that kind of classic Star Wars text roll where you have to read, like, it's about like taxes, like they're putting a tax on like on traders in the fucking galaxy, and it's just like the Trade Federation are coming in and it's like want to implement these taxes, and the Republic are against it. It's just, you have to go to a fucking, like, it's nearly like watching the Dáil. It's like watching like Dáil Éireann TV. Rostas TV, like, it is, oh, it's rubbish, man. But I'll give you some highlights, right? So Watto is the guy who owns young Anakin. He's the guy who has Anakin as a slave, and he's like this kind of like blue little alien with a big snout on him.
Space double.
Yeah, Space Double. Yeah, and he is a quality character. Like, he just doesn't give a shit. Like, he's just like buying and selling slaves and just having the crack all together and like giving out to Anakin. And but then he's always kind of praising Anakin as well. You know, he's kind of like, you know, that man has a, well, that kid actually has like hands. He could fix anything. Like, you know, so that's great. And then he's like trying to do a deal as well with Liam Neeson's character, which is Qui-Gon Jinn or something. I don't know.
Qui-Gon Jinn, is that?
Qui-Gon.
Yeah.
He's like putting bets on him. Then there was like the pod racing bit where Anakin goes racing against a few boyos up on Tatooine, and Jesus Christ, like it's so like gimmicky. It's like the whole thing has been like geared to like set up a video game. Do you know? It's like, remember Wipeout on PlayStation, the original PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
It's really, like, trying to nearly promote that. Like, it is, I don't know, like some of the stuff that happens in that race where just stupid, stupid shit. Like, do you know, people getting sucked into engines at the start and stuff. It's fucking ludicrous. And supposedly as well, Liam Neeson signed up for the script, for Star Wars without reading the script, because he was just so, he just really, really wanted to get into the Star Wars universe.
And as everybody like, did.
As everybody did. Yeah. That whole details, like him, like his relationship with Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, like it's fucking miserable. Like they're two miserable bastards, the two of them, the whole thing. Like, and then you have the storyline with, is it Natalie Portman? Is it as Padme or Queen Amidala? Yeah. And like, they're trying to like, for the whole thing, they're trying to like hide that like she's not Padme. That's the most obvious fucking thing ever, like throughout the whole thing. Like I haven't seen the Phantom Menace in about like, I would have totally forgotten about that. And then it's just like, wait a minute. Isn't she like fucking Queen Amidala?
Yeah, but her double in that is Keira Knightley before she was famous.
Oh yeah, that is true. Yeah. Supposedly, I think that Keira Knightley wanted to go for that role as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it got shut down.
Should have been the right age, actually, which Natalie Portman wasn't. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, overall, total muck. So I started actually. Episode 2 there, and I think I have an hour left in it, but would recommend that more than Phantom Menace. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
What I was going to say is that the one thing about episode 1 is that it isn't episode 2.
No, fuck. I just think there's just like better action in it and stuff. Like, now, it's still shit, like, it is still shit, but I just think there's like, it's a bit more, I don't know, coherent. I feel like just like, Episode 1 is just too much like backstory for the need of backstory. Like they're just putting in backstory just to fill it up. Whereas I think like episode 2, they kind of go, all right, here's an actual bit of a storyline here. Well, yeah. Anyway, that was my review. Anyway, here's my recommendation.
would you think that 53% on Rotten Tomatoes is an accurate reflection of the film?
Yeah, I would. I think some people are going to like it. Like, I think there's like, I'd say probably me. When did it come out? 99, was it, or something?
Yeah.
99. So I'd say me as a 9-year-old would have been like, oh, pod racing is cool. Like, you know, on reflection, pod racing is not cool.
when you look at the you know, original Star Wars films, and they're talking about, you know, when we watch them in 2020, we accept that there's going to be like flaws in the effects and stuff like that. So,
oh my
like,
god, that's another thing. Yeah, the effects are brutal.
But that's what I was going to say. Like, I think you like your expectation for special effects, etc., is quite low, because you're cognizant of the fact that this is shot in 1977, like, you know, it's just not going to be at the same level of special effects in 2020, especially given that we've got like the Marvel universe at the moment. And like when you look at the effects in Endgame, like, for example, you know, you can't compare the two. I think the problem with 1999 and this, there's this era from I think like 1997 to about 2003, 2004, where I think filmmakers in Hollywood had the tools to do special effects really, really well, but they just didn't understand them. And they just weren't able to utilize them properly. And I would argue that, you know, probably maybe Men in Black aside, from really popular films at the time, there aren't that many that special effects are done really well. And like, I think the poor use of special effects brings The Phantom Menace down an awful lot. And as well, it's just one of the poor written Star Wars films. Like there are some brilliantly written Star Wars. Some of the later Star Wars films are quite good and well written. But I think Phantom Menace is just in this area where, you know, I think were they just trying to cash in because there hadn't been a film in 20 years, and then they're like, right, we cash in, we make a new Star Wars film, we have this film written, and we just go ho. And like you said, the pod race and like was just. We can do it, so we will.
Also, actually, I never mentioned fucking Jar Jar Binks. He's the worst character of all time. Oh my god. Yeah. Oh my god, what? Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah. What a fool. Like.
I think a big part of it is that like when they made the original trilogy, they had limits, and there was no limits for Phantom Menace. But George Lucas was a very, very rich man by the time he made The Phantom Menace, so he was just interested in taxes. And fake princesses, I guess, and a thing he thought he could make into a toy, it's Jar Jar Binks. Yeah, I mean, it didn't need to exist, really. I liked the new trilogy a lot more, except for the last film, which was shit. Yeah, Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, I never even watched Revenge of the Sith. I just was out by then. I just couldn't be bothered. So. Yeah.
I think that I think from what I recall, Revenge of the Sith has a pretty cool like final battle, like lightsaber battle, all right in it. But yeah, other than that, that trilogy is just people are just. But I will persevere for the good of man. I've heard good things. I've never watched the Clone Wars. Or I haven't watched Mandalorian either, but I've heard good things about the two of those. So
yeah, I've never watched them either. I've heard good things. So
laughing because I know I'm conscious that like Liev is in the room next door. I really hope she hasn't heard this because she's never watched any Star Wars. And I convinced her yesterday that we would start Star Wars from scratch tonight, and that after this we're going to watch Star Wars. And I was saying, right, we do it in chronological order, so it makes a bit of sense to her. But like, I hope she hasn't heard that because you haven't sold it.
I had a similar thing with Kira, where Kira was just like, oh, I've never watched Star Wars or whatever. So I said, I'll call you when fucking episode 4 comes on.
I think you come on to good thing there. Like, Mandalorian is something I'm really looking forward to. Disney Plus is new. I think they've been very smart in that. Like, they have this, like, you know, Mandalorian is the kind of thing that lure you into Disney Plus, because at the end of the day, like, a lot of people our age would have, like, If we wanted to find them, we'd be able to find the DVDs of your Toy Stories and your Bugs Life and all these other films that you know, if you really wanted to, you'd find. Whereas like something like Mandalorian is something that they can hype up, and people who are really into Star Wars or really enjoy the films can now be like, well, I really want to watch the series because you know, something I'd be interested in. So
every Marvel film as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and all 30 seasons of The Simpsons, because like nobody's buying DVDs of the last 20 seasons of The Simpsons, but you'll pay a fiver a month to maybe see if they're any good or not.
Yeah.
So, they're not.
No. Although I did watch one today from season 23, which I've never seen, and there was one good joke in it, but it was an amazing joke, but it was just the one. Yeah, so I mean, it might be worth sticking with them to see that one good joke from 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, actually, I saw one, like, I had no idea what season it was or anything, whatever it was, but it was one where, like, Homer was on, he was on Skype to someone, I think, and they're, like, chatting away, like, on Skype, and, like, you know the way, like, the screen, like, freezes, and the person's just like, ah, like that on the screen, and Homer's just like, oh, the screen's after freezing there. Screen's after freezing. And then the person goes, oh, no, I just have cerebral palsy.
Oh, it was Mo. Yeah.
Oh, it's Mo. That was God.
I think one of the interesting things about The Simpsons is, like, you know, we touched on It's Always Sunny There. Like, seven series to that 70 show and the 8 series was shite. And it's always only meant for, it's gone for 14 series now, and I think they're shooting series 15. And then you look at like Scrubs, say they got 9 series, maybe 8 good series before.
Yeah, yeah.
I think with The Simpsons, they got 8 good series. And I think it's just a thing where, like, unless, and with The Simpsons, they're the same age, the same characters the whole way through. I think it's very hard to like keep character development going beyond kind of 7-8 series. I think people, like,
yeah.
That's probably part of it, because at the end of the day, after like what 8 series, 170 episodes or so, like what more hijinks can Homer get up to? And I know, like, nowadays there's like more technology, so you can go down the route of Homer does something fucking stupid with Zoom or Skype or something, but at the same time too, there's only so much character development you can get.
Did we talk about this on another episode?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because I have a theory about what The Simpsons should have done, and I'm pretty sure it's correct. Is that after season 10, they should have jumped forward 5 years. And then every 5 seasons jump forward another 2 years in time so that they actually grow up. Now they had stuff like where like Martin Simpson went to college in the 90s now. They have a grunge episode. It's like, no, they're from... Marge had Bart in 1980. That is fact. You can't change that, you know? Yeah. It's very annoying. I find it wild that like I consider myself a huge Simpsons fan, right? But I have... Sorry, it's a moth. I haven't seen most episodes of The Simpsons. I've seen like maybe a third of the episodes of The Simpsons, and I'll probably never watch fully 2/3 of them, but can still consider myself a huge Simpsons fan.
Yeah,
because it doesn't. The other ones don't count.
Like, but even it's the same, like all those Irish Simpsons fans pages or any memes pages, like a lot of the rules on them are just like seasons 1 to 10, maybe 11, and that's it. Like you are not allowed to post anything in any of these forms. After that, like, because it's not considered like,
If you post Lindsay Nagel, you're getting banned. It's like,
I'll occasionally throw up a meme onto those, but actually, the best, my most successful meme, I think, is from one of the later series where Ed Sheeran was on, and I put the picture of Ed, the Ed Sheeran character, and Lisa on a screenshot, and just put in the words. She played the fiddle in an Irish band, but she fell in love with an English tan, and like, you know, they're just playing for the audience thing, you know. But like that's from one of the later series, and it got left up. So I think, like, you know,
it's more about your phrasing rather than the actual.
Yeah, exactly. I think as well, like, I remember reading something somewhere that there was an issue with screenwriters, and that was kind of the beginning of the downfall of the quality of the episodes. But I think the thing with The Simpsons is it got such a worldwide cult following by series 10 that they've been able to get another 20 series out of it and not suffer too much in terms of viewership, maybe. I certainly not watched The Simpsons. I've not sat down on the television to watch The Simpsons deliberately in 15 years. But like...
Yeah, I did it tonight, but that was the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed is that they don't know how to edit for like humor anymore on it. There's like, and I'm nobody, but I could see they should have cut that. All the jokes went too long. They let it drag out. There's like they're editing for a studio audience who aren't actually there, like leaving laughter breaks. It's really weird once you notice it. But it's like from like season 16, 17 onwards, there's like laughter breaks and stuff that goes on. You're like, early Simpsons would have cut it off there. That was a joke, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
And that's really interesting because I don't know if you've tuned in, but Zach Braff and Donald Faison have started a new podcast where they talk about Scrubs. And are actually reviewing each episode. They're going back to the very beginning. And they did
Sign me up.
Listen, like, Alan, I actually don't know your opinion on Scrubs, but like, I love Scrubs.
I have the first 4 seasons on DVD. We used to watch them all the time in college. Yeah.
They got the main writer on, Bill... what's his name?
Bill Lawrence.
Bill Lawrence. They got Bill Lawrence on for the 3rd episode. And they were talking to him... And Scrubs was the first sitcom that was shot from single camera, so it wasn't like in front of a live audience. They didn't have the sound effect of laughs and that. And I actually never copped it watching, but it's actually when you hear that and it tweezes you straight away, because that kind of deliberate pause for laughter or something. They actually had the sound effects for the first, I think, 3 or 4 episodes only, and then they got rid of the sound effects. There's only one sound effect that they kept throughout the whole series, and that was Todd's high five. They kept that sound effect in. Everything else they got away with after 5 or 6 episodes, which I never kind of caught either. But again, that's this kind of thing where he was on about, like, you know, it was very much the quality was driven by the writers and the actors. And like, I think it's just this thing where like you get writers disinterested and then it loses a bit of quality. I think maybe there's a bit of The Simpsons there where they're trying to be a bit too smart maybe. And I don't know. I found when I've seen like later episodes in passing, like I might just be in my parents' house and it's on TV in the background and I'll watch 10 minutes and I'm like, this isn't, it's just not written as well, I don't think.
I actually have a great fact about Scrubs. So if you look at Scrubs, ER, fucking, I don't know, all these kind of, all those medical dramas or comedies or whatever, right? Like someone has gone and done this research, but Scrubs is the most medically accurate out of all of them as to like things that have happened in the show. Like,
that's correct, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Like, just like, you know, someone like this, obviously, like comedy, like takes this show, but then like, if you look at the likes of like ER or House or whatever, where like, just things are so batshit insane and they use like these like drugs that just like wouldn't work or whatever, or like procedures that wouldn't work. And you're like, so good.
Like using chloroquine for prophylaxis in a coronavirus outbreak.
Yeah, exactly. Just take it out of the fish tank.
Yeah, well, I Bill Lawrence actually mentioned that in that episode as well. And the fourth episode, then they bring Sarah Chalkin, who played Elliot. It's a fucking brilliant podcast. The episodes are about an hour or so long. I really, really enjoyed it. So if you're a Scrubs fan, highly recommend. Alan, move on to you then. What's your big recommendation for the listeners to sign up to?
Right, so my big watch recommendation is a sitcom that ran from 2009 till 6 seasons later, but there was gaps, so probably about 2016, Community, which is about a lawyer who gets disbarred because it turns out he never graduated from college and has to go back to community college, and starts a Spanish study group to try and get the hot blonde in his class, which is a very basic premise, and then it basically ignores that premise after 2 episodes and just is a bit, it's about the study group, but there's no real studying happening. It's probably, I think it's like the smartest, in my opinion, the smartest comedy ever. The way it does references, it just like completely reinvented reference humor. Like probably the most famous episode is one called Modern Warfare. So all the episodes are called after classes. And in this episode, it's near the end of season one. So the main guy is called Jeff Wainer. He's played by Joel McHale, who is mostly famous for Community, I would say. He's in some bits and pieces, but mostly Community.
And he did that Tiger King behind
the after show. Yes, yeah. He did. Yeah. Very funny man. So in Modern Warfare, he goes for a nap in his car in the community college and wakes up and the entire college has been decimated by paintballs. And it turns out there's a paintball competition going on and it becomes every action movie ever. And it pulls off the Terminator, John Woo movies, 28 Days Later, The Warriors, Die Hard, and develops the characters and has an emotional payoff all in 22 minutes. And everything in it is pitched. The action in it is actually incredibly well-shot action in 2009. And it's also still really, really funny as well. They do amazing. There's another episode which you would probably recognize a GIF from, or you'd recognize the actual show. If you ever see a GIF of Donald Glover walking into an apartment that's on fire carrying pizza,
Oh yeah,
and there's people like, so that's from Community. That's an episode where they show seven different stories depending on the roll of a dice. They show what, because they basically roll dice to see who has to go get the pizza, and they show what would have happened if each of them had to get the pizza, what would have happened to the rest of the group. It is amazing. It's I've never gotten to talk about it on a podcast before. I'm very excited. It's everybody in it is so funny. It's Donald Glover's first real acting thing. So Donald Glover was a sketch comedian, then he was a writer on 30 Rock and left 30 Rock to do Community. And then he left Community in season 5. Yeah, season 5 to go be Childish Gambino and then did Atlanta. So it's had a lot of shake up. So once Donald Glover left, it got weird. And Chevy Chase left as well. Chevy Chase plays a very old, horny man in it. And him and Dan Harmon, the creator, did not get on at all. Like, Dan Harmon used to have a live podcast that he does called Harmontown. And he would play Chevy Chase's angry voicemails. to him at this podcast.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there was a lot of bad shit went down behind the scenes. There was, I won't go into all of it because it's a bummer, but it's been mostly sorted now. But Dan Harmon was forced off the show at the end of season 3 because he was so hard to work with. And sorry, get out of here, you. So season 4 had 2 other showrunners, and they're very, very, very talented showrunners. From, I think they did Happy Endings, which is another amazing comedy that just isn't anywhere at the moment. But if you can't find it, you should watch it. But the whole show is just weird. It's very noticeably a different show without him. So it's called the gas leak season. They came back for season 5. They brought him back and implied that there was a gas leak in the school for the entire season 4, and that's why everybody acted weird. And then season 6 only aired on Yahoo. So that's never really been on television or Netflix before, and that's there now. And that was like their final last hurrah. So it's like, it's 6 seasons. Maybe a movie will happen someday. And it's just so funny. Everybody in it is super talented. Alison Brie from Glow is in it as well. She plays Annie Edison.
Thank you. I was like, where the fuck do I know Alison Brie from?
Yeah.
Glow. Fuck. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's just the best. I love it. I think everybody should watch it.
I've never seen it, so I'm definitely getting stuck into this.
Yeah, it is. Like every single sitcom ever, it takes a couple of episodes to get going. By the end of it, at the end of season 3, in the post-credits bit, the post-credits bits are always brilliant, by the way. It has Troy and Ab, which is Donald Glover and Danny Pudi, doing a little like semi-improvised rap in Spanish. And that should be when you are locked into it from there. Yeah. Or there's a Day of the Dead episode where they have a party and Abed is Batman, and it's just, it's very good. It's very, very good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good. Because I've only watched like a few episodes of it so far, like never watched it before, and just like the teacher cameos that like they have in it are just amazing. Like some of the teachers that they have coming in are just so funny. Like who do I have in? It's like, I think it's like episode 3 or something where there's this teacher and he's just like, he makes Joel McHale's character just go like, you know, it's like, you know, I need you to believe, you know, I need you to live your life, you know, and it's just, it's fucking, it's so good, like, you know, and like, what's Joel McHale's character called again?
Jeff.
Jeff, yeah.
Yeah.
So Jeff is there, he's just like, to the study group, he's like, oh, man, this is a fucking easy class, easy A's, like, you know, he's like, everyone needs to sign up for this, like, you know. So the teacher is like, yeah, A for you, A for you, A for you. And then like after the class with Jeff, he's just like, nah, man, you're phoning it in. You are phoning it in.
You are not seizing the day.
You need to seize the day. Live your life. So good.
I think it sounds like one of those things that would be right up my alley. But I think you probably hit the nail on the head with a lot of hidden gems there, Alan, when you said like it takes 2 or 3 episodes to get into, you know.
Mm.
I find an awful lot of time with that, like Stephanie even be sitting on the couch and they'll throw something out for the first episode, and it's, you have that like little moment where you make eye contact and you're like, is this any good?
Yeah.
I don't think you can tell in the first episode if something like,
yeah.
I don't know, have you ever watched I watched I think the first ever episode of Suits. Did you ever watch Suits?
Yeah.
And the first ever episode of that, I was just like, oh my god, I'm in. I am
really?
In the long haul. Yeah, I thought that was one of the best episodes. That and obviously the first episode of Breaking Bad are like 2 fucking first amazing episodes ever. Like
the problem with the first episode of The Suits is it's the best episode of Suits.
Yeah, that's true. Like it just goes so formulaic after that. Then like
I think Suits series 1 and 2 is very good, but I think then like it becomes very predictable after series 2.
I know, it's just the same thing. Like what's his name?
It's going to be found out. No, he's not.
He's back in it. They're going to know a secret. Oh, no, they haven't. It's just the same shit over and over again. Like, although one series that I loved and it was like so, so formulaic was House. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, yeah.
House, yeah.
Yeah. It was just the same shit over and over again. Like, every single episode, like, oh, what the hell is wrong with this guy? Is it lupus? No, it's not.
Yeah.
Lupus.
We used to stream it illegally in my wife's college room. She used to go to UL, so we used to stream that, and Heroes were the two things we used to watch. And basically, if they came up with what they thought it might be, we'd just flick up how much was left in the episode. I go, no, that's only 20 minutes gone. That's not that.
To wrap things up, lads, we go around with one last question there. Tommy Coyrie just commented on the live video there and said, great show so far. What's your favourite film from the 90s? So, it's a long birth there.
Ooh.
I'll go first to give you a
place. Yeah, do it.
My favourite film from the 90s is very simple because it's probably... I'll give two answers if I can. My favourite, obviously, growing up in the 90s, being a child in the 90s, animation films, obviously, and I've spoken about this on Snowcast before, and anyone who listened to me talk about Toy Story would know that I absolutely adore it. And it was the first collaboration, big-time collaboration between Disney and Pixar, and it's the film that inspired Disney to acquire Pixar. So I think, Toy Story definitely is my favourite film from the 90s, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, it's just brilliant. And actually, just last summer they brought out Toy Story 4 and it's managed to do four really, really good films that actually are all quite good. It's one of those rare films where the sequel is a very, very good film, and it's one of those even rarer where the third one is still a very, very good film, and the fourth one again actually isn't that bad. I think it's probably the fourth best Toy Story film, but even at that, the storyline wasn't great in Toy Story 4, but again, Bo Peep was fucking brilliant character.
Oh yeah, I still cried at it. Still laughed.
I got completely fucking overly emotional at the end of it. No matter what, it still evoked an awful lot in me, which is the whole fundamental point of films. But Toy Story, the first Toy Story, has to be there for me. But I have to give an honorable mention to Space Jam. Space Jam is phenomenal. Yeah. Even as someone who didn't watch basketball back then, the ingenuity, and I was complaining earlier about filmmakers using special effects and not knowing how and doing it poorly. Space Jam is just the quintessential special effects combination animation real life film from the 1990s. It's so good, so good. And it's actually when you watch it back, actually, it's being released on Netflix this week again. And when you watch it back, there's some there's some absolutely brilliant moments in it. When Bill Murray comes in and the kind of evil boss man of the Monstars, I didn't know they were having Dan Aykroyd in this film. some really, really funny little bits in it that just you don't pick up on as a kid. So having watched it primarily as a kid and watched it recently again as an adult, it actually has bits there for the adults as well, which I didn't realize I had back then, but it definitely has. Yeah, Space Jam and Toy Story. Toy Story would pick Space Jam for me, but it's there are two films from the 1990s that really stand out for me.
I suppose my one is probably Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. I don't know. I suppose I'm trying to, when you're kind of talking there about when Tommy put that question initially of what's your favorite film from the 90s, I'm kind of what's a film from the 90s? But it's actually trying to put yourself in the shoes of when you were in the 90s and what it was like back then. And what just comes to mind is that there was back then was it was all about birthday parties. Remember you had a kind of sleepover birthday parties when you were when you're in primary school, and I remember there was one of the lads that we used to go to, and he used to be reckless. He used to go to this birthday party, and he'd be absolutely gearing up for this birthday party all year long, because his parents didn't give a shit what the hell happened all year long. So you'd be there and you'd be able to rent whatever fucking movie you wanted, so we used to rent these grand just ridiculous films. So we got Freddy Got Fingers, All the American Pies, Scary Movie. Scary Movie is a quality film. But one that we rented as well was Doug Be a Menace to South Central While Drinking Juice in the Hood. Have you ever seen that? No.
I haven't seen it. I do know if it's yeah.
Yeah, so basically it's like along those lines of a spoof film. It's by the Wayans brothers as well. And it is basically taking the piss out of all those kind of like gangster hood movies. So like Boys in the Hood and like all those kind of films there from the 90s, like but like it's stupid comedy, and I can't say it's my favorite, but it's the one that comes to mind at the moment. And it, like, I would actually, I'm putting that on everyone's recommendations. I don't know where you can stream it or whatever, but it is it's quality. It's like a self-racism thing whereby like they like take the piss out of like racism at the time for black people, but by black people. It's very, very funny. Like, you know, it's very good. There's one scene in it, all right, where there's this like black cop, and he's racist to black gangsters in it, and he has this like huge long monologue of how much he hates black people, and he's just like, I hate black pepper. I hate the black keys on a piano. It's just very funny. Like just the whole scene is just very, very good. And yeah, I highly recommend it. Yeah.
And Adam, what right. With yourself?
I go for Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is the best film of all time.
Actually,
in 1993, I think we had to. So like my aunt's like church group arranged a special preview screening of Kilkenny. So we all got a bus Kilkenny to see it before it came out. And I had read the book, the full fucking John Grisham book, all 400 pages of it. So I thought I knew what was going to happen. So I like had to cover my eyes for some bits because I was 8. But I loved it, and I've watched it more than any other film, I think. Now, like, it obviously it was scary and cool when you were like 8 or 9, but now watching it back as an adult, and everybody is so good. It's so weird that, like, if you look at the careers everybody's had since then and before that now with a bit of knowledge, like, it's wild that Jeff Goldblum was in that film. It is nuts that Laura Dern is in that film, you know? Mm-hmm. How is Sam Neill in that film? You know, it's crazy, but they're all brilliant in it. And Samuel L. Jackson is in there, just in there. And fucking Wayne Newton from Seinfeld is in there. And it's the kitchen scene in Jurassic Park is the most tense thing I will ever willingly inflict on myself. And I will do it over and over and over and over again because it is perfect. It is perfectly pitched. I just love it. And Aladdin as well. If we're going for an animated one, we'll do Aladdin as well. Because Aladdin is the best Disney film, in my opinion.
What do you make of the new Aladdin?
Didn't watch it. I saw the clip of Prince Ali, and it was slow and labored and looked very boring. So I just didn't even bother.
You're wrong. You're wrong.
Really?
Yeah, man.
You like it?
Yeah. It is like they just did their own shit. But it was like it's not as good, but
yeah.
For the deluge of Disney remakes that have come out, like, it's definitely like one of the top ones there, I would say.
And did you two things? Did you like the original, first of all?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And did you like the version of Prince Ali in this one, in the new one?
Did I like? Yeah, I did.
You did. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like in a theater as well. And like it was very theater stage, like theatrical in that sense that like the like choreography, everything of it is incredible. Like it is just like how everything is done in that scene is just really, really, really good. Yeah.
The friend of mine is a sound engineer, and he said that the whole film is mixed and recorded really weirdly. Like, they made no effort to hide the fact that people were, like, in very heavily treated soundproof rooms doing their vocals and stuff. There's no life in any of the... But according to him, I haven't seen it now. It's just gone off someone who does that kind of thing. He said it's really the kind of thing Guy Ritchie wouldn't pay attention to, I guess. Which is, Although I heard... go ahead.
The one thing about it that is that I would give it really good respect is that they, for Robin Williams to be the genie, right, you cannot match that. And what they did with it is that they tried not to match it. They made Will Smith this kind of cool hip hop genie, who was he was funny as well, but it wasn't trying to hit the same notes as that Robin Williams was hit. It was trying to hit different notes, and I think that was extra bonus points for it.
When I hear he's the genie with hip hop, that sounds 1997 to me.
What's wrong with 97?
Actually, I haven't watched any of the live action ones. I saw Beauty and the Beast on Christmas Day just by default. But I don't feel the need. I feel like they're not for me. They're for people younger than me. I have my ones, so I don't really feel the need to watch them.
I think I thought of the remakes. I thought Aladdin was the better one. The other remakes that I've seen, I haven't enjoyed at all. I actually enjoyed Aladdin. I think it's just a different film, and you just have to if you embrace that as a different film.
What other remakes didn't you enjoy? What other remakes didn't you enjoy?
The Jungle Book I thought was quite poor. Beauty and the Beast I thought was just not nearly as good.
Lion King,
yeah.
Lion King was absolute rubbish. What they did for that was just scene for scene the original Lion King, but just basically put it and rendered it into fucking 3D computer generated animation and then just had Beyonce roaring over the top and had a terrible song for her then thrown into it.
The Lion King, the animated Lion King is brilliant. Anyway, I can see why Disney are doing it, but
money is why they're doing it.
It's to extend the copyright on them. They've refreshed the copyright for another 20 years.
That's pretty much it. I can see why they're doing it from a corporate point of view, but as Alan said, I just don't think it's for us. But the only I'll stick up for 1997 for one thing. Jurassic Park 2 was in 1997, and also had a brilliant cast. Including Vince Vaughn, which is
again an unlikely choice for an action.
You do not expect Vince Vaughn to show up in a sci-fi dinosaur film that isn't riddled with jokes. But
there's two words why Jurassic Park is one of the greatest films of all time. And it's John Williams.
I thought you were going to say Clever Girl, but yeah.
No, John Williams, man. He's fucking that soundtrack,
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
is it makes it it actually just makes the film that scene in the kitchen would not be the same without that that composition is fucking unbelievable.
I replied to someone on Twitter during the week with a Clever Girl meme, which was very funny, and it just turned out to be incredibly condescending and misogynistic, and it wasn't meant that way at all, and it was horrendous. In my head it was going to be really really funny, and a person would really get the reference and be like, that's quite funny. But it just really backfired and was awful. So be careful when you're using Clever Girl memes. Even though it's one of the greatest films of all time, or one of the greatest scenes. That's really, really good. I promised my partner that I'm going to watch a film with her friend. I've convinced her to watch Star Wars. So we're going to probably draw that podcast to a close there. That was a fucking lovely chat, lads. I really enjoyed it. I think the technical difficulties at the start aside, I think I'm going to have my work cut out for me in the editing booth on Sunday evening. But we'll get a podcast version out that'll be better than the video experience. I want to say thanks to everyone that did stick with us through the video recording. Thanks to everyone who listens. Alan, thanks so much for fucking tuning in. And if anyone's listening to this, please go to Juvenalia because it's such escapism. And at this moment in time, when people are in lockdown, Juvenalia is the perfect escapist type of podcast that people really, really need. And it's just tailor-made for this situation of wanting a bit of escapism and a bit of nostalgia. It's just such a good podcast. Really enjoy it. Thanks so much for keeping it going, because it's really good.
Thanks for having me.
No bother. You any time. Like, we really fucking enjoy having you. I can't emphasize that enough. Right, guys. I'm not going to put a plea out for Patreon. I'm just going to say, if you have a fiver a month to spend or something, please donate it to your local food bank or something like that at the moment, because they need it a lot more than we do. So I would say that. I know that Waterford Food Bank are taking them, having a peel out at the moment. The three of us live in the general Waterford area. So if you live somewhere near a food bank, if I'd ask you, if you have 5 euro to spare listening to this or watching this, just, you know, find out if you can donate it to your local food bank. And that would be what I would request of you, to mind the Patreon and stuff at the moment.
Yeah, fuck that.
That's irrelevant at the moment. It's not really important. I know the Waterford Food Bank have a really big appeal out this weekend. So if you have a few pounds donated, you can actually ring the hypermarket in Waterford, Super Value Day or Arcane Quality Food Stores. And you can, if you're shopping there, you can donate a bit of your basket to the food bank. If you want to buy some tin goods, biscuits, cereal or something long lasting like that, or also like what I did, because I can't leave home, I rang up Arkeen and just basically said, can you take money off my card and give whatever the food bank needs to the food bank. So I would implore on people, if you're in a lucky situation like I'm in, where you've got a couple of pounds to spare that you can help someone out with, consider the food bank, because a lot more people will need them than in the next few months than have needed them previously. And that's a bit of a somber note, but on a more upbeat note, the Juvenalia back catalogue is fantastic. And speaking of like the 90s and this like turn of the century and streaming and stuff that's really good, the episode, my favourite Juvenalia episode, Alan, I said this to you before, is one of their Freaks and Geeks, which is just a really, really brilliant TV show. And I really recommend listening to that Juvenalia if you've not listened to any to get into it, and watching Freaks and Geeks if you haven't seen it, because Seth Rogen, Jason Segel, and a lot of these guys like Franco, James Franco and stuff, it's where they started out. Parting words for the guys there, Owen?
I watch or listen to the Ron Burgundy podcast as well. That's a good one.
Awesome.
myself and DJ have gotten into that lately, and that's a good podcast to get into. But yeah, everyone stay safe. Wash your hands, wash your face.
Wash yourself.
Wash yourself, yeah.
Alan, parting words for everyone. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. I'll hope to do it again soon. I'm waving, but the green screen is cutting out my wave. There we go. Yeah.
I just need to change screen, stop the live streaming, and should we have a quick chat before I leave with the lads? It's long haul.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.